Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series.
You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Gene Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Watch Hacks, streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Grand Canyon University makes earning your degree possible with over 130 academic programs for traditional campus students, with more than 80 bachelor's programs offered online. GCU provides you with the personal support you need, from complimentary unofficial transcript evaluations within 24 business hours to scholarships, academic support, and your GCU graduation team, led by your own university counselor. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning. This is Nancy Pelosi. Just kidding. It's George Severus. And I have two huge announcements. One is that my show at the Bell House featuring Moss Perricone and Esther Falik is this Friday on February 2nd. And according to Eventbrite, which I just checked, there are only a few tickets left. So get them while you can. And then the second announcement is that we are finally doing our biannual earnestness bonanza. And this year we're doing it for Valentine's Day. So if you have questions for me and Sam that you want us to answer earnestly and humorlessly and from our deep or the deep wells of our hearts, then please send those questions to stradiolab@gmail.com. They can be questions for us. They can be questions about your lives. You can solicit advice. You can ask us about, I'll say it, politics, culture, the economy, foreign policy, you name it. So honestly, we would love to read your questions and we would love to answer them. I'm looking at some that have come in recently and they are juicy, juicy. So let's get some more in there, folks. All right. Love ya. Enjoy the show.
Podcast starts now. Today is a red letter day because we are recording. And, you know, in the grand scheme of time, those days come but once in a while. And so I'm taking...
You know, it's like my fourth grade teacher used to say, when you have a disappointment or something, it's just a dot on the wall of life. Have you ever heard that before?
So powerful. I've never heard that in my life.
You know,
Why does the wall of life have so many dots?
Well, exactly. Or does it have... Well, that's the question, of course, is if you zoom out, is the point that you see a lot of dots and they all look sort of the same? Or is it that most of the wall is blank and there are just a few imperfections?
And it's glaring. And you're saying, I wish I didn't have that dot there. That's sort
that's
of...
right.
The metaphor falls apart for me. If it was saying it's a fleck of paint that matches the rest of the wall, I'd say, then that's beautiful.
That's,
but a dot
right.
on the wall...
A dot on the wall of life. I mean, it is still a dot. I mean, I would be much more comforted if the saying was, it doesn't matter at all.
But a
dot in the wall of life, it is still there. And are we talking permanent marker? Is there any way to change it?
Yeah. Do I still have the paint that I could cover up the dot with?
How big is the wall? Because a wall can actually be small. A wall doesn't have to be large. Let's say we're talking about my bedroom wall. I don't have the biggest bedroom. You know, you put a dot on there. you're going to see that as soon as you walk in.
It's actually all I'm going to think about for a while.
And in that sense, you're almost like, all right, well, if I have one dot and there's no way to get rid of it, I should have many so that at least it can seem intentional, which of course sends the wrong message, because then what are you going to do? Go around making mistakes all the time?
I would rather die. I mean, if there's
Absolutely.
A dot on the wall and if there are multiple dots on the wall, I'm looking into moving. I'm saying my time here is up.
But then if the wall is the wall of life,
that's then
how exactly going. How exactly are you going to move to a different life?
Exactly, you're going to have to jump off a cliff.
Yeah, well,
so that's so. Pretty unfortunate. You know, I had a teacher that had one of those posters that was supposed to be inspirational that was like, 20 years from now, you won't remember what jeans you wore or who you talked to or like blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is actually really not inspirational. This is actually quite sad.
You're actually pointing to something really big, I think, which is that so many inspirational posters for like high schools or doctor's offices, whatever, are actually deeply nihilistic. Mm-hmm. Like, even when you look at the one that's like the whole galaxy and it's like, you are here, it's like, well, don't tell me I mean nothing.
It doesn't help. It doesn't.
It doesn't actually help at all.
I'm looking for purpose and meaning. So stop telling me I'm meaningless. Well, not just that.
Yes. And then, by the way, if you're at school, the whole point is you're supposed to be like building your personality, learning things, doing well, preparing for college, not to be, you know, my mother.
But well, you can't take
if you
can't
go
take
through
it,
no, life, yeah. If you go through life saying, I'm just a speck in the galaxy, it's just a dot in the wall of life. Well, it's like, well, what's the point then? What are you trying? What are we teaching these children?
Again, we're teaching them to jump. I think
we're teaching them to jump or to be a complete nihilist.
Yeah. Yeah. And we wonder
we're
why
saying,
depression
Nietzsche, God
up.
Is dead. God is dead, Nietzsche.
Yeah. I actually do have to say to this point, there was a groundbreaking moment when I was in college when I was like, oh, no one cares about me. Maybe I can now come out of the closet.
Mm.
Like in an empowering way, because I thought totally. Because in my mind I was like, okay, if I'm gay, that's going to be the New York literal Times will be doing a profile on like how this could have possibly happened, and yeah, it'll be the talk
of
the
town. It's going to say, who's this faggot by Maggie Haberman.
Yeah. And the picture would be sad. It would be me like staring at a wall in the dark. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't put up with that. But then the groundbreaking moment was being like, oh, no one cares. I'm actually not going to make press because
of course
I don't have a following.
But here's the flip side of that. Yeah. Imagine you came out and literally no one cared.
Mm.
That would be really sad. You want a select number of people to care.
Yeah.
Maybe you want your family to care, but in a positive way. Maybe you want potential romantic partners to care. But you don't want to, you know, if a tree comes out in the forest and doesn't make a sound, is it really gay?
That's a great point. If no one cared, you never came out.
Yeah.
Damn.
It's really, so much of life actually comes down to the right number of people caring.
I think that's really genius.
Thank you.
Now I'm like at a complete, I've fully run out of stuff to talk about. Can you believe that?
Well, I can tell
I'm
you.
Like, well,
I'm
in perfect. A sort of. We have nothing else to say.
No, I just came. Did I tell you I was at a baby shower today?
Yeah.
I was at a baby shower today.
Yeah, you said I was at a baby shower today, so I hope I don't have stuff in my teeth.
Yes, I did say that because it was a delicious brunch, family-style brunch.
Got it.
And two things I want to say. First of all, you know, there were a lot of, it was a very inclusive shower in the sense that there were all genders and, in fact, all ages. There were a lot of mothers of friends of the bride there.
That doesn't sound very groundbreaking to me. When you said all ages, I thought you meant there were some, like, 22-year-old party girls there.
Oh, no, but that would have been honestly iconic.
Yeah.
But I was sitting with a couple of moms, and this is my impression of all the moms at this baby shower. You know, you go out these days, they're putting cumin in desserts. None of my business.
Huh. Did you argue with them at all?
No, I actually was agreeing with every single thing they were saying. But you know how they have activities at baby showers. This is actually maybe my first baby shower ever, but they had us decorate bibs. So they gave you markers, like little colorful permanent markers, and you decorated a bib for the baby.
Wow.
And mine was pretty good.
I can't help but feel that we're both feeling very family first today. You're at a baby shower. I got lunch with my cousin and brother. You know, what happened to us being sort of radical artists?
I know, it really is tough. You know, can I tell you something? Last night, I went to your boyfriend's birthday party.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Gay guys. At a gay bar.
Classic.
Guess when I got home? 11:20.
Damn, that hurts.
The way I am 65 years old.
It's a bummer. I mean, I was falling asleep watching Survivor on a Saturday night at midnight. And I said, I can't even, it was the finale. I couldn't finish it. I said, I'll save it for the morning.
Mm-hmm.
I woke up at 7 a.m. today. It's a Sunday.
That is insane. Well, you're also going through you're doing sort of a dry January against your wishes.
I'm doing everything I'm doing right now is against my will.
Never has someone got a desirable writing job and complained this much.
That's true, actually. I'm kind of pushing the boundaries.
It is sort of crazy.
I'm, of course, grateful for all opportunities. But that being said, I had to move to L.A. I was gun to my head, had to move to L.A. The apartment I'm in, you know, it's against my will entirely. Every meal I've had has been forced down my throat. It is. And this lifestyle is it's.
And yeah. Where can people donate?
Subscribe to the Patreon, babes.
Please subscribe. Honestly, if people could subscribe to the Patreon, that would be really helpful for me at this juncture, much more than Sam. No offense.
Yeah.
I would really love that.
No, I don't know. I actually left our recording yesterday and I was like, am I entitled? Like, is there some, what is it? What's the word for what I have?
It's not entitled. It's, you know, it really is part of your charm. It's a specific type of. It's not entitlement at all, because it's not like what you want is something so, you know, you want to live in a skyscraper in Manhattan.
Right.
Like, actually, you want your simple life with your beloved partner in Bushwick and your dog. It's not like you want these huge things and you're like, I deserve to live in a mansion. It's just that you don't want anything to change.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Like, I don't know how to, you know what it actually reminds me of? It's like, I moved around quite a bit as a kid, as did you. And it reminds me of just like being so annoyed that things are different because you're living in a new city and there's nothing you can do about it because your parents are the ones in charge.
When I was a kid though, I enjoyed moving around. I was sort of, I liked reinventing. I liked like being like, what will my vibe at this school be? I found that to be very fun.
But don't you think though, like if you were in psychoanalysis, potentially the analyst would say the reason why you have sought out such a stable adult life is to overcorrect, or not to overcorrect, but to correct for the fact that there was so much change when you were young.
Well, yeah. If I was being psychoanalyzed, if they were looking at the most obvious thing, of course that's what they'd say.
Well, honey, welcome to psychoanalysis.
Turns out anyone can do it.
Oh, quite literally.
Yeah, they'd probably say that, but I can't tell. Okay. So I'm not entitled. That's good. I just hate change.
Are you like, would you say you're making an effort, and you can tell me to stop talking about this whenever, but would you say you're like conscious, you're waking up every day and you're like, I'm going to make an effort to do these three things to like embrace my new surroundings? Or are you sort of like enjoying wallowing in, sort of being a little ticked off?
Okay. I will say I'm enjoying being a little bit ticked off. I think I'm enjoying wallowing. I'm enjoying how like pitiful my life is here and how empty it is compared to how full my life is in New York. I think, but at the same time, I have fantasies of like what my LA life will be like, but it's hard with when you move here and like start the job instantly because there's not much time to do it. So like I have like Saturdays and Sundays, but it's like, oh, I have to record the podcast and I have to like get to like run my seven errands and before I can actually relax. So then by the time you're done, you have like 6 hours to do whatever.
Yeah.
That's my hot take. But I actually think we should bring in our guest because he's going through the exact same thing.
Well, you know, after we've sort of talked about how much your new life sucks, I think it's time to talk to one of your coworkers.
So this guest is my coworker, and actually what's crazy is he lived in Bushwick as well, and we had never met until we worked together on the Paramount lot.
Crazy.
So please welcome to the podcast, Ismail Lutfi. Lutfi. I said it wrong.
Lutfi.
It's Lutfi. Okay. Okay. I'm going to say it different. Ready? Please welcome to the podcast, Ismail Lutfi.
Hey, guys.
Woo! Woo!
George, what's up, bitch?
What's up? Ismael, do you relate to my feeling? Do you disagree with 100%. My feeling?
No, we have the exact same feeling about being... I used to live here years ago in LA, and I hated it a lot. It was one of the worst times of my life. I was deeply sad, depressed. I got on SSRIs that didn't help. I was so freaking sad. And then I got a job in New York, went to New York, best time of my life. And now we're back.
Wow.
And it, you know what it is? You're not entitled. Mm. And neither am I.
Wow.
Well, we are in a way. But just by virtue of being Americans, we're entitled. But creatively, it's like it's like Rome.
Of course.
The empire.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's still around in some capacity.
Sure.
Yeah. I've heard it wasn't built in a day.
That's where I'm going.
Yeah.
So you have these centurions. They're like the soldiers.
Okay.
But they're not doing it 24/7.
Right.
They're farmers. They're all farmers. And that's their life. They love farming. Mm-hmm. They have a wife. In your case... Some
gay guy.
Some gay guy.
Yeah.
Which would have been accepted.
Would have been celebrated,
honestly. And you just want to make your farm really nice, but your job is sometimes you have to go to Gaul and kill a bunch of French people.
Yeah.
And that's what we're doing right now.
Yeah.
We're on the front lines. We have our armor. We don't want to die.
No, God,
but
no.
This is what you have to do to be able to go back to your farm and build it up and be nice.
And our farm is Bushwick.
Our farm is Bushwick. Where in Bushwick did you live? Oh, can you not? Are you scared?
I mean, I'm not. I was off the DeKalb. I'm off the DeKalb.
Oh, yeah,
I'm right next to you.
Yeah.
All right, relax. I've never felt more not in the room than I do now.
Well, okay. Dude, we're in Gaul right now.
You're enjoying your
farm.
Here's
what I'm going to say. I'm going to speak for the listeners and say that this LA thing. Here's what I have to say about this whole thing. All right. So people move to LA. Anytime someone goes through a change, of course the beginning is difficult. But if you move to Denver, if you move to Boulder, if you move to Boston, whatever, you sort of have to like get on with it and like figure out your life. But the thing with LA is that it actually encourages everyone to sort of wallow in their own to be like, no, of course I'm not entitled. I'm just off balance spiritually. And I have to like go to a retreat or whatever. So with LA, actually, you just stay in that slightly off place. And you're like, what is it? Like, do I need to join a cult? Mm. Do I need to start going to Orange Theory?
So true.
Like,
yeah.
Do I need to get some work done? So it almost, I would say LA almost thrives on that. It's like you have to prolong that initial 2-week period where you feel off and have that become basically your entire personality, and then mm-hmm. you're officially an Angeleno.
I think true. Also in Los Angeles, what I'm struggling with is I keep wanting to like reinvent. Like I want to be like a new person, but it's like all the things I would do. Like I'm limited right now in so it's like the weekend, and I'm like, okay, Friday night, like where are we going? And now I'm like, right now I'm sober against my will, so I'm like, okay, well I guess I'll like have a tasteful dinner with someone and then go to bed at 10 p.m. And then it's like, okay, well that kind of, and then it's like, okay, well then tomorrow I'll like, because I'll be awake so early, maybe I'll like work out in this like weird capacity, like a bigger workout than I normally would do. And then it's like, well, I can't really, I also am not really allowed to work out because of my health issues.
You have a lot of excuses preventing you from making any changes.
Exactly.
It's kind of perfect.
It does seem like maybe your problems actually have more to do with your unrelated health issues than with Los Angeles.
But yeah, where did the health issues, where did they happen?
In Los Angeles.
Yes. And you know what you should get for that? Acupuncture.
Woo!
Reiki.
I'm going to get some Reiki for my damn kidney.
You should get some Reiki.
Damn. Yeah, it's definitely, there's something sad about it because it also feels like everyone is in it here. You know what I mean?
In what?
Everyone is... It's just the Hollywoodness of LA is just, it seeps into everybody's pores. Like every janitor, every teacher, everyone has it kind of.
Totally. You know what it is? It's like, you know how like the definition of neoliberalism is like the logics of the market dominating every part of life? In Los Angeles, it's the logics of entertainment dominating every part
exactly.
of life. Like it is a specific kind of Los Angeles ideology.
I think that makes LA the most evil city in America.
Wow.
Of the four. LA, DC, New York, and San Francisco.
Sometimes I think San Francisco actually makes me feel more evil.
It's up there. I think it goes LA, SF, DC, New York, in my opinion, in terms of evil. In
America. Wow.
That's how I view.
Okay.
DC's similar, though. Everyone in DC is kind of like talking about Connor Lamb.
Yeah.
And like politicians no one cares about.
Yeah. It's kind of funny. Like, I love being in DC because people will be like, did you know Meghan McCain lives there? And yeah. Like, yeah. Huh? Yeah. Exactly. That's cool. Yeah.
Well, also, they have their own micro celebrities. Like, everyone there, it's like how everyone in Hollywood knows the name. Like, no one in the real world knows the name of the woman who played Priscilla in Priscilla, but everyone in Hollywood is like, she's doing really big things. And similarly, there are like mayors and senators and governors that sort of only have name recognition in DC and nowhere else, even in their home state.
Wow. Who's the actress that plays Priscilla?
I don't know her name. We don't live in Los Angeles.
We haven't lived here long enough.
Do you guys know it?
No, I've no idea.
I would say knowing that actress is actually a great, it's like literally the divide between working in Hollywood and not working in Hollywood is knowing that actress's name. I have literally Googled it multiple times to be like, wait, I know Jacob Elordi is Elvis, but who's the titular Priscilla? And each time I say, oh, her, couldn't tell you.
Wow.
She's having a big year though.
What else is she in?
Good for her.
I don't know.
Oh, you know, that's actually toxic that she's the star of a film. And I'm like, but what else is she in? I'm like, that's already big enough.
Yeah.
That's fucked up.
Well, you're just looking out for her. It's not, clearly it's not enough because we don't know what her name is. So she needs to actually move on to the next one.
It's true. Yeah. She's going to be like household recognition. And then in like 5 years, we'll be like, yeah, Priscilla was fucking amazing.
Yeah.
Her start at Priscilla really.
I was there on Priscilla. I'm going to delete this episode. That's proof that I wasn't there.
Are you scared that CBS is going to hear that you're unhappy and something bad will happen to you?
No, because it's not the job I'm unhappy with. I think we've talked about this where it's like the job is actually the fun part. Yes. We like go to work and it's like we enjoy the job and
it's very fun, George.
It's very fun, George.
It's a fun job.
Well, I'm really happy you guys are having a great time.
It's only when we leave work that the spiraling starts.
Yeah, totally.
And then it's also, yeah, just like, yeah, I like go home and again, it's I'm wallowing in the set. Like I go home and I watch Survivor and I know that that is a bummer. And yet I do it every night. Like there's something about being like, this is a bummer and I'm doing it.
This is like what you guys are describing is like why Silicon Valley companies in the early 2010s like started having all those perks is because everyone would like move to San Francisco from, you know, going to Yale or whatever. And then like they would be taking the tech shuttle to the Google campus and they'd be like so depressed after work. So then Google was like, we're going to get trampolines.
Well, I actually do
That's
think
totally it.
We work on the Paramount lot and it's like, can't you guys paint a wall a fun
it's
color?
It's so sad.
It's the everything is
the
beige.
The lot's depressing.
It's crazy.
Feels like a concentration camp. It's really sad. Everything's
you guys are
concrete.
Not meeting the entitlement allegations, I fear.
The food is terrible.
The food sucks. No, I actually haven't.
They whip us.
Yeah, they could make me paint the wall and I would be happy.
I would love to.
I would love to paint a wall.
It's crazy to see tourists like in buses, they'll come through the lot and I'm like, what are you looking at?
Well, literally,
it's
what is
it?
Sad look at?
Place.
Yeah.
You guys are like, it's truly 3 weeks and so jaded. You're like coming out of the office to the tourists. You're like, all of this is fake. This town is a lie.
No, I've been bad about that. Like one time an Uber picked me up from work and he was like, man, you're living my dream working at the Paramount lot every day. And I was like, it's not as good as it looks. Yeah.
Wow, that's so sad.
I think I clicked don't talk.
All right. I'm going to nip this in the bud. And I think it's time to do our first segment.
We're kidding. We're playing heightened versions of ourselves.
Yeah, totally.
We're so humble and grateful.
No, I'm so grateful.
Yes.
It's the best thing I've done, that job.
Is that true?
In terms of like going in and feeling happy and not wanting to blow my brains out at work.
That's true.
I like being there.
I like being there.
It's fun.
I have a huge update. The actress's name is Kaylee Spaney.
I've never
both
heard that
of the
in my
names
life.
Are spelled wrong.
Kaylee
you can't
Spaney?
Be named C-A-I-L-E-E.
That's tough.
Was she that bitch in Pearl?
She was not that bitch in Pearl. Because okay. Isn't that Mia Goth?
Yeah, or was she the one in Smile? Who's the one in
No, the one in Smile is Kevin Bacon's daughter, Sosie Bacon.
Sosie Bacon.
Get a grip.
Get a life.
These names.
Unbelievable.
I think Kaylee's biggest problem, other than that her, unfortunately, face is unmemorable, is that she spells it C-A-I-L-E-E.
Okay, I have a question really quick before we do the first segment. George, was that too much? Were we complaining too much? Because in my mind, it was funny, but then I was like, maybe it is too much.
Listen, do I think everyone listening to it will be like, damn, I'm so glad they're finally saying all this? No.
Oh, damn.
It honestly might
but we have to be honest.
It might be.
In this industry.
People would probably prefer if we were shitting on everything and then also being like, the job sucked. That would help probably. It's kind of maybe more annoying that we're like, but the work is
so fun. Well, that's the thing. That's the thing. Because you guys are saying, you're saying the job is so fun. You're saying you're working at the Paramount lot. And then you are just sort of complaining about a general ennui. I think if you came in and you were like, you know, they fucking moved us here. It's underpaid. It's non-union. Our boss sucks. Yeah. Like every day we get physically assaulted. You know, people potentially would be a little more, a little more on your side.
So they're not on the side of the walls need to be painted a better color?
Yeah, no, I don't think they're on the side of we have big Hollywood jobs and we don't like the aesthetics of the office.
Well, that's true. Well, you know, it's you live long enough to become the villain, you know?
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We are both dealing with such different issues in our day-to-day lives. You have a full-time job in Los Angeles. You've had to uproot your home. You have to figure out work-life balance. Meanwhile, I am a freelancer in New York City. How do I fit it all in one day? How do I create my own schedule? What am I, some boss lady in a film?
You know, it's so hard. You have to be boss and employee. But you know what? We can't keep these things bottled up. You know, we need to let them out.
That's right. People all carry around different stressors, both big and small. And when you bottle them up, it can start to affect you negatively.
Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down.
I'll tell you something. Therapy in the past for me has been just a place where once a week I can tell someone what I'm thinking of in a safe and enclosed space where no one can enter and ask me to send an email, because it is my time and it is my time for therapy. And everyone deserves that in all across this great nation.
Yeah. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and hey, suited for your schedule.
So get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Stradio today and get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Stradio. Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Gene Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay. Okay, Ismail, our first segment is called Straight Shooters. And in this segment, we will ask you a series of rapid fire questions that's basically this thing or this other thing to gauge your familiarity with and complicity in straight culture. The only rule is you can't ask any follow up questions or we will scream at you so loudly that your LA ennui will be justified.
But I fear that if I really play along and just answer everything correctly, like, quickly, that'll not be fun.
That's, I mean, I'm proud of you for not asking a question. And I think
I'm really proud of you for not asking a question. Yeah. I was like, oh no, he's going to immediately come out at a loss, but you knew exactly what you were doing.
And I think that's a reasonable fear and that's part of life, you know?
Yeah. Maybe lean into that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Sit with that.
All right. Sam, go ahead.
Okay. Ismail, sayings that are kink shaming or bangs that are face framing.
Bangs that are face framing.
Okay. I'm just a girl or my name is Earl?
I'm just a girl.
Okay. Touched by an angel or caressed specifically by Chris Angel?
Chris Angel, caressed.
Okay.
Easy.
Lying about your checkered past or flying the flag at half mast?
Lying about your checkered past.
Oh, wow. Okay. May, December or January Jones?
May, December. May, December.
Wow.
May, okay. December. Being weak on foreign policy or looking chic and causing jealousy?
I mean, looking chic.
Of course.
Looking chic, easy.
Okay. The ladies of the canyon or that one lady, Jane Campion?
I don't know either of what those mean, but Jane Campion sounds like a cooler thing.
Correct.
Nice.
Way to support female filmmakers. Okay, Ismail. Burying the lead or marrying to breed?
Oh.
Marrying to breed.
Wow. Okay.
Curveball.
That's amazing. So we rate our guests on a scale of 1 to 1,000 doves. And I think, you know, I was so impressed that you sort of addressed the issues in the game head on up top, but didn't change your performance. I found that to be really groundbreaking. So I'm going to go 923 doves.
Wow. You actually got two more points than our guest left yesterday, I believe.
But who's counting?
Sam is really,
I'm in the 20s. Really, I'm very in the 920s.
That 920s range is really where you thrive. Where
what was the last, can I ask questions now?
Yeah, I guess actually you can.
Yes. Yeah, the segment's over.
What was the last guest dove count?
921.
And I'm 923.
I think it was 921.
Yeah.
923.
Look at that.
Yeah. So that's sort of the space we're in right now.
That's great.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Did you?
I really liked how calmly you answered. I feel like it was, you thought about it just enough. You didn't put a whole show of overthinking it and pretending that it's more deep than it is.
Yeah.
But you also took it seriously.
Yep. You took it seriously. You engaged with it.
I hate people that overdo stuff. That's just fun. Not to talk about our job again, but there's a lot of that going on that really makes me mad. A lot of like,
oh, interesting. Name names.
Yeah, please.
Like, there's a lot of when he was on, he couldn't answer a single question.
That was confusing to me.
It was, it's exactly what you're saying, George. In terms of like, it's a fucking game. It's a silly game, and every single prompt he was like, it's like you know what to say.
Literally, read the words on the paper.
Stop acting like this is crazy. This is not crazy.
He was like, I don't want to get canceled. And it was like, how could you get canceled from this?
Oh, I think we need to retire. I know we also do it too ironically when it's like, oh, I don't want to. But we need to retire all forms of like prefacing something by saying, I don't want to get canceled. It's enough.
Awful.
And I think I think we don't preface things with like, I don't want to get canceled. I do think I preface things with like, does this make me unlikable? Mm-hmm. Which is more of a realistic question.
Yeah, it shows, it's just self-aware. As opposed to the canceling thing, it's like, it's the opposite of self-aware. It's like, you're not in a position to get canceled. Who are you?
You're also like you're overestimating your own importance. You're engaging with what's going on at such a remove. Like, we're having a conversation. No one's getting canceled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Totally.
It's, you know what they need to learn? What I learned when I was in college and afraid to come out of the closet. The getting
that
canceled, that no one's thinking about you. Like,
that's right. Getting canceled is just a dot in the wall of life.
Also, anyone who's going to say something that will legitimately somehow get them canceled, they're not going to preface anything by saying, I hope this doesn't get me canceled.
Yeah.
If you're a guy who's going to say the N word, you just say it. Like, you're not scared of a room of people being offended.
I mean, it would be sort of funny if someone in a stand-up special said, oh, I hope this is okay to say. No,
that could be
and
an entirely...
And then just say the N word.
That could be a groundbreaking new tone, because so many people are like, it's more challenging. It's like, what, are you going to cancel me? Yeah. And then they do it. But I think sort of the wondering and then continuing forward could be brand new.
I'll agree with that. Generally speaking, I am tired of sort of like, you know, Joe Rogan, edgelord comedy, whatever, you know, Ricky Gervais, all that stuff. But actually doing a full special where the entire performance piece is you honestly like speaking in the tone of someone that's like at a, you know, gay straight alliance meeting, but then you say the most offensive thing after prefacing everything would be very funny. So I would like to challenge maybe Ricky Gervais or one of those illustrious comedians to attempt that.
Yeah. I think that's the way to be fresh. Should we get into the topic?
I think we have to.
I mean, well, we've run out of everything else to talk about. We hit complain about job, complain about LA, cancel
segment
culture.
And complain about job again. Yeah.
Complain about job again.
Yeah. What other blessings can we sort of shit on that we have? Well, Ismail, what is your topic today?
I think I teased it a little bit earlier, but
you did.
You did, and I noticed that.
History buffs, knowing things about places in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, being a guy who knows stuff about things.
What
about politics, but specifically about places and history.
What do you think is straight about knowing things about places in history?
I was saying it earlier. I think there's something about the way that it affects your ego that I think is specific to straight men, that we feel like we're showing off by knowing stuff about a thing or history or a date in a way it's very unique to us, because we do it and I do it. I'm a big guy that does that.
Yeah. You brought up the Roman Empire
immediately. And I do it, and I know as I'm doing it that none of the people listening care. But as I'm doing it, I'm feeling kind of good. It makes me feel good and like strong, smart, strong.
It's an interesting double-edged sword, because I feel like
Gladius. Kind of Roman sword.
it's a Gladius, because I feel like it has the reputation of being bad. It's like, it has the reputation of like eye-rolly, straight guy, of course. And yet they still do it. It's it's an interesting like girls don't like it. Like,
I know.
And yet it is done all the time still.
But I also think I think about that often with when people do when straight men specifically do something that is so like iconically made fun of. Like, think of a straight guy literally wearing a fedora or like playing the ukulele. Like, things that have been so, we've decided so long ago that those things are lame or cringe or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think we overestimate how much that makes it to that part of the population. Like, I don't think a guy that starts talking about the Roman Empire is thinking to himself, I know this is annoying, but I still think it's interesting enough that I'm going to bring it up. I think he is completely oblivious to the fact that behind his back, there are all these conversations happening about how annoying it is when he brings up the Roman Empire.
To be totally upfront, was it annoying that I brought up the Roman Empire immediately? I wasn't doing it to service the meme. I was trying to make a comparison between our jobs and
the tools we have in our tool belt.
I did not find it annoying at all. It was in the service of a joke.
Yeah.
It was foreshadowing your topic.
That's
so that
why
you're just
it.
Being good at your job of being a podcast
guy. Yeah, I actually found that great.
Okay, great.
And I kind of felt like you were character building.
Exactly.
You were sort of letting us know who you were.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's tough. I think I'm thinking about also like, so you, we're watching the game. We were doing the intro and you said, well, that's good because I'm watching the game. Mm-hmm. It's actually surprising to me when straight guys do straight guy stuff. Because to me, it's sort of like, well, don't you know? Don't you know that that's...
It's
so on the nose. But then gay guys, when we are being gay guys, I'm always like, oh, we're doing the gay guy thing. Like when we're listening to Dua Lipa and talking about Houdini, I'm like, oh, we're being gay guys.
Is Houdini a gay guy thing?
No, Houdini is a Dua Lipa song.
No, Houdini is a single by Dua Lipa.
I'm like, what?
Gay guys love magic.
I didn't know about Houdini.
Oh, that's so
well,
funny.
To even say like watching the game is on the nose, it's like it so betrays how much of a bubble you and I live in. Watching the game is not on the nose. Watching the game is literally the default. Like at any given time, most people in the world are watching the game and we just happen to not be. So we're like, that's kind of weird.
Well, I also think, and maybe this is again the bubble, guess what? Ring the New York versus LA alarm. I feel like straight guys in LA are much more comfortable saying where they're going to watch the game, whereas straight guys in New York still want to cling to an alt straight identity.
I mean, again, I do think that might just be you living in Bushwick and knowing only comedians. I think many straight guys in New York are watching the game.
Yeah.
You guys are being crazy.
I was with straight guys at the shower today and literally everyone was talking about the game and it, with no sense of like irony or like, haha, look at us. We're like supporting our wives and then watching the game. It was just like what life is I'm dragged to an event by my wife and then I get to talk about the game with the other husbands that are there and maybe we'll sneak away to watch some of it on our phones or maybe someone will be like, oh, they scored like during the toasts, let's say.
Sure,
and then
sure.
You get to go home and watch the rest of the game in peace.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're wrong. Your read on LA and New York this time is incorrect.
Damn,
I think
that's
just
too bad.
As much game love here
so,
as there.
I do want to talk a little bit about the history. Like, what is it about being a history buff that is straight? We've talked about this a lot with past guests, like Sudi Green's topic was information. And we coined the term information doming, which is when you like try to just like recount as much information as you can to just prove to someone, I am the one who knows things and you are the one learning them from me.
Totally.
Yeah. And I do think that is a big part of being a history buff. I think another part of it is, you know, it's a sort of like uncontroversial thing that knowing history makes someone smarter, much more so even than knowing math or than reading a lot of literature. Like it is the thing that people point to most as something that makes you educated almost. And so in a very mathematical way, straight guys are like, great. So I will learn as much as I can about that. And then I will win.
Sure. Yeah. And I think it's really smart to look at it from that angle as a straight, not smart, but like it's strategic because we're not to be a history buff again, but we're all in history right now. So it's like a ubiquitous thing that we're just, when you know about stuff that's happened, it's easily accessible. Like you can always talk about it.
Sure.
And I'm thinking the thing you said about like how women like don't like it when guys are talking to them about shit like that. I thought about my experiences with my ex-girlfriends and ex-wife, plural ex-wives.
He's been married twice.
Yeah. And
go on.
I know. And in those relationships, there was a lot of talking about the different, you know, the Umayyad Caliphate, you know, you guys know about that. The Abbasid Caliphate. These are different caliphates of the Muslim world. A lot of talking about that to my ex-girlfriends and ex-wife. And when I think about why I did it, it was because I didn't have other stuff to say. And so a part of me was like, well, I know a lot about this and I'll just ask her, like, do you want to know about, you know, Sultan Harun Rashid, like for a little while, and they'll go, and then I'll just start talking about it. And that's like 45 minutes killed, like easy.
Yeah.
And they didn't really care, but they were having fun listening to me just kind of wiggle around because they like me. You
sure,
know what I mean?
Sure.
We're dating, we're married.
Yeah.
They're enjoying just hearing me. Are they picking up on it and like going to ask about it in a week? Like, oh yeah, that's like that the Battle of Yarmulk. Like, no, they're not going to say, they're not going to remember any of it, but it's just to fill time and to like build rapport kind of. That's what I think it is. And it's easy. I don't really have to be showing my personality in any.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Angle. It's a way to hide behind. It's literally like, well, here's a list of facts.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Also and God forbid I run out, because then I will have to say who I voted for.
Yeah. I have to say who I voted for. I have to say how I'm feeling right now.
Yeah. Because it is. About my dad.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's hard. It's interesting to me that you were like funny and into, I feel like, history facts are so dry, and it's so like, to me, people that are addicted to history are like, not like a huge LOL convo to have.
Well, it's funny you say that, because a lot of historians are actually really funny people.
Oh my God.
And I could give you a list of names.
Yeah. I actually think there is sort of like there's a sort of quirkiness.
Well, there's history humor, but that's different. That's more like they love to do those little jokes where it's like, yeah, that'd be like if the blah, blah, blah empire mixed with the blah, blah, blah. And it would be like, what are you saying? And it's like, I'm saying, I don't like my mother-in-law.
You know what's funny is even you doing an impression of a guy right there being a history buff turned me off. Like, it really annoyed me. That's the issue with being a history guy, is if there's another history guy around, we're like, it's like same magnet.
It's kind of similar with gay guys, to be honest.
Enemies. Immediate enemies. And yeah. If there's ever another guy who knows stuff, like, it's hell.
Yeah.
Then if I say anything, he's going to like tag it with like, oh, right. And then also in 1704, then that happened. Right. Yeah. Well, and then in 1705, that happened, you know. So it's not a good way to be.
Yeah. Well, because it's sort of, there's a thing when it's like, well, when I do it, it's with tact.
Exactly.
And then when someone else does it and you're like, well, don't think history buffs are like that, because that's not what we're like. I actually do it really tastefully.
Exactly. But I don't know if I do.
Mm. Can I tell you something that Ismail did in The Office?
Please.
We were going around saying our special skills are. And he said, I can draw the entire map of Europe from memory. And whoa. Then did.
It's one of my few like really cool things I can do. I can draw a really accurate Europe.
Damn, with, you know, orders. Who you would love you is my mom. I would always be so shamed when I was growing up for not having a good enough sense of geography, which for my mom was like one of the signs of someone being educated and intelligent.
Really?
And by the way, it was her fault, because we moved around, so I never got like a good education.
I would love your mom.
Should get you guys in touch.
Yeah, you guys should link up.
Sypharis, Greek?
It is Greek, yes, but it's also a made-up name. We could talk about that later. It's I shortened my much, much longer and more Greek last name.
Got it.
My dad is a big history buff.
A lot of dads are.
Yeah.
Yes, a lot of dads are.
It was like we'd be on vacation and it'd be like, okay, well, while we're on vacation, we're going to go see where the Wright brothers first flew.
You know what's funny?
Well, this is the other thing with being a history buff, and why it's so like, you know, we're sort of making the argument that it's somehow straight male coded, which can be a bit problematic, because you're saying like, well, straight guys are smart and know about things. And then, you know, everyone else sort of doesn't and thinks it's lame to know history. But the thing with being a history buff specifically is like, there is a focus on two things. A, the idea of history as objective fact. Mm-hmm. Like, there's actually very little space for alternative histories and history of the oppressed class and different perspectives or whatever. And two, basically history as a series of great men. Like, that is what a lot of it comes down to, is like reading biographies of a military general and of presidents and being like, oh, well, Winston Churchill like was so strategic in this, this, and this. Like, so it actually is, being a history buff in that specific way only serves to reinforce your own ego as a straight man, because you almost are like subconsciously putting yourself in this line of great men.
That's
you're like,
exactly.
Well, there was Churchill and now there's me.
Exactly. That's so true. But it's funny you said that, like, your dad would want to go see like the Wright Brothers Museum or something, because I have absolutely no interest in American history.
Really?
Most boring topic in the world. I also don't like American
geography. I actually
have
to completely agree. And I must tell a story that I think maybe I've told before, which is that one time I had someone I went to college with visited Greece over the summer, and I was there. And so I was like showing her around, and she's a teacher, and she was talking to me about the Greek educational system. And she was like, so how did you guys learn history? And I was like, oh, you know, there was like, we did like world history first, then we did European history, and then we did Greek history. And that was sort of like how we moved. And of course, Greek history is very long, so it took, you know, a long time, whatever. And I was like explaining that. And she looks at me truly as though I'm like an idiot. And she goes, okay, well, when did you do American history? And I was like, we're in Greece. Like, we did it for like a week. Because in the grand scheme of things, that's how long it is. Like, yeah, we didn't learn about like the Louisiana Purchase in Greek high school.
Wait, you went to high school in Greece?
Yeah.
Oh, you're like, you're Greek as fuck.
I'm Greek as fuck.
He's Greek as fuck.
Nah. That's how you say yes.
Nah.
All right.
You know what's funny is not is actually like, not can be a, so doing this to someone is like sort of a offensive thing. It's like giving them the finger or something. And oftentimes you'll do that and say nah. So it'll be like nah. And so it can be sort of like a negative thing. That's why I'm correcting you. So you don't go to a Greek person saying nah. And then they're sort of like, yeah.
Nah.
There you go.
Damn, that's crazy though. Yeah. That's why.
But anyway, I don't like American history.
Too short. It's too short.
Yeah.
1700.
But the history buff, the specific American history buff is, as you're saying, even more toxic. At least learn about, at the very least, Europe. And then, of course, you know, you want to sort of open your eyes even further if you can handle it.
I do think when it comes to history, specifically battles don't speak to me.
Battles get me going. Give me the
no,
day.
No, guys love battles.
I love the day. I love the combatants on either side. How many allies each person had. How much cavalry there was.
I want to know, like, what life was like. Like, I want, like, a slice of life. I like that, too.
Yeah. I like that, too. When I think of history and when I use it for conversation, I don't think I'm explicitly... just like you said, talking about like the strong men of history. I think I'm going like, every soldier in the Roman army was a farmer and they were tilling their fields until they were called to the battlefront. So to your point, I like to think of it in terms of what they were living like back then. I think that's what's interesting.
Sure.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm good.
You know, Sam, in terms of the battles, the obsession with battles, you know, that was sort of the original watching the game, is learning about battles.
Damn, that is so true.
And so I think there's a real straight line between being into battles and being into the big game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that makes sense.
Whereas learning about how people lived is more like, you know, watching a Noah Baumbach film. It's much more queer. It's much more inclusive.
Yeah. And that's all I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. The gay analog or whatever is like, it's actresses.
Wait, hold on. The gay analog to the big game?
To history buff.
To being a history buff?
Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, yes, there's, you know, yes, you could be like the gay equivalent is like basically knowing like Oscars trivia.
Yeah, I think that's, I feel like at the most, true to
at
me.
The most broad. Yeah, at the most broad. I'm trying to think if there's any way to give gay people a little more credit and be like, is there anything slightly more intellectual that we can be like, that's the equivalent of a gay person knowing something.
Knowing about furniture.
Totally. Honestly, yeah. It is like knowing about prissy little things. It's like knowing what the four Roman pastas
are. That's not more credit. That's way less credit.
That's what I'm trying to say. No, I think that's what it is. I think the gay equivalent is knowing different different like designers.
But I think that's not, I think actually there's a misconception, whereas I think straight guys actually do know which battles were fought when. I think they actually do care. And I actually think gay guys don't actually know who the designer of that chair is. And I think gay guys don't actually know like the runway history of blah, blah, blah. Like they just have an unearned sense of like, I know this.
I mean, you know what I'm going to say.
What?
I think that might just be the gay guys we know.
No!
Many gay guys know about fashion, about like which runway was important in what year.
I think so few gay guys actually know. Like, if you are in an... Like, I'm rarely do I, like, don't get me wrong, the friends that we hang out with are stupid, but when you hang out with the gay guys outside of that circle, they actually get dumber a lot of times as well.
I see what you're saying.
Like, yes, there's a higher crust, but that's like, it gets smaller the further up it goes.
Of course. Of course. I mean, and that's maybe the equivalent of like an intellectual straight guy knowing, I don't know, very deep history.
But. Yeah, exactly. To defend the gays in this like analogy, where the comparison we're doing, most history buffs and myself included, I don't think I could tell you the date actually, like the actual date of any battle. Really, I could tell you a ballpark for many battles, but just to your credit, it's like like my point being that like, oh, gay guys don't actually know all the design. I don't think most history buffs really know anything. Other than like a vague sense of like when stuff was happening, where, and like what life was like.
But that's why I think Oscars are the biggest comparison. Yeah.
I mean, there is a sense in which identifying as a history buff is almost like identifying as an empath. It's a little, the lady doth protest too much.
Exactly.
Like, no self-respecting history enthusiast would like have that be the main thing of their personality.
Totally. And I would not really be identifying myself as such, except that you told me I have to come on with a thing. I would not actually call myself a history buff, but I have been called one.
Yeah.
And
I can't tell if you're like being humble now. Like, it's a very confusing. You're trying to distance yourself.
Can I ask
yourself.
You something, Ismail?
Please.
Like, in your, because this is something that I think is a big part of being a history buff, is just like the constant consumption of history media. Mm-hmm. Like, there are so many history podcasts and, you know, again, biographies of military generals and law, like the fetishization of like reading the, oh my God, what's the guy that wrote The Power Broker? Robert, anyway, reading like a 900 page book of history or a 900 page biography. Mm-hmm. I'm looking up Power Broker. Robert Caro. Okay. Yes. Like that is, it's almost like you don't even have to digest any of it, but you got through 900 pages. So my question to you is, what is your like history media consumption like? What is it that makes, how do you maintain your historical knowledge?
Wow.
Fuck. That's such a good question. I mean, I think at this point, early, like a decade ago and growing up, it was a lot of reading books that were not maybe 900 page tomes about, you know, Ulysses S. Grant necessarily, but we're just in the space of like, you know, I'm trying to think of a good, like Augustus by John Williams, which is just about Octavian. Sure. Like that's kind of a good starter for like getting into that shit. And now, sadly, I would say my history information is just from my algorithm is now purely all YouTube feeds me is stuff about battles. All my Instagram is stuff about like Turkish warlords from the 1500s.
Yeah.
So it's kind of devolved into just whenever I go on my phone, I'm learning like one little thing.
That's nice though. I mean,
I'll forget it all.
I have a suggestion for a gay versus straight comparison.
Okay.
And let me know if this rings true. I almost think it's straight to know about older history and gay to know about recent history.
Yeah, I think there's something to that. I think people love to be like, no, you forgot that Tyra Banks put out a single in 2007.
Exactly. But also, of course, the recent trend of like how we were unfair to various women in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I also feel like if I'm going to talk about something historical with a gay person, historical and not about celebrities, I think it's a safer bet to talk about like the Iraq War than to talk about the Roman Empire. Like there's something, and it almost maybe even stems from a narcissism of like recent history. The one we lived through is actually more important and more worthy of study.
And I'll say this, it definitely requires more, almost like intellectual bravery to discuss modern history.
Yes,
there's exactly. less like of a sheen of objectivity to it.
Sure, so 100%. Sure.
Well, it's also, there's something almost more progressive about being like, okay, let's talk about the Iraq War so we don't repeat those mistakes or something.
Yeah.
Whereas the people that are talking about the Roman Empire are by and large like incels. Like there is something actually, and please do not write in if you're a progressive historian. Of course, I know that all history departments are run by, you know, Jimmy Carter types. I get it. But at the same time, the people that are hobbyists that are learning about the Roman Empire and learning about like masculinity in ancient Greece are doing so almost as a cover for their own prejudices.
True.
Yeah. True. Wow. That's a really beautiful way of looking at it.
Thank you.
Damn. I do wonder, I think that brings up an interesting point with literal like queer history, where we love to like sort of paint with broad strokes and not know the details in 100%. A way that is like almost really freeing and fun, but only almost.
Well, there's actually, I mean, it's almost like the other side of the coin of hegemonic historical narratives, where it's like, okay, so the hegemonic historical narratives are like, it's all great men that made a series of choices that led to democracy and progress. And then the uneducated queer person who wants to have an alternative narrative is like, no, it was women, period. End of discussion.
Yeah, it's Abraham Lincoln was a gay guy.
Yeah, literally. Or it's like the way people will talk about Stonewall without having without even perusing the Wikipedia page.
No, at this point, Stonewall is a mythic space. It's like not about what happened at all. It's like in such an interesting way. I'm addicted to it.
Yeah.
Because there's something so like, well, you get, it's like going for like the emotion behind it rather than what is the fact. Like they're just like, well, there was oppression and then there was liberation. And that's all totally. You need to know. Yeah.
Wasn't it like there was.
Well, and drawing a connection between like the joy of, you know, a queer bar or a queer club or something, like drawing a connection between that and then a circuit party where you are going, where every single person there has an 8-pack and is on G, and you're like, well, we are part of this great historical narrative, and it has all led to this night.
History in the making, baby. Yeah.
That's so funny.
Interesting. Wow.
I mean, that was pretty groundbreaking.
Yeah, I feel like a lot got said, and a lot of it was pretty good.
Yeah. Okay, guys love the Iraq War. That's pretty much the take.
Guys love the Iraq. I guess maybe that is just me.
No, I actually thought that was a smart way of approaching it. That's trying to give. I think you're on the nose with trying to give gay guys more credit, because I think that we do sometimes try to reduce ourselves to a little stupid, and that's not always the case, and in fact, often not the case. But it's more fun to be like that.
There's something just not cute about knowing things and saying things that you know. Like it's just not cute.
It's not charming. Yeah.
It's not charming.
Well, it's not charming unless someone asks you, sometimes this is my challenge to everyone out there. If you find yourself listing facts, stop and ask yourself, what started this? Did I just start talking out of nowhere? Did someone ask me? Can I just not think of a different thing to say?
That's actually an excellent exercise. It's an excellent exercise. I have done it twice during this recording.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Where I've stopped myself from saying a thing.
No, never silence yourself around us.
No. You wouldn't have wanted to hear it.
Do women ever tell you information? Has there ever been a notable time when you've been told information by a woman?
If they do, I blocked it out. I'm trying to think. I mean, of course. Like, I dated a girl from Poland for a long time, and she would tell me a lot of Polish stuff and history about Poland.
And you would say, that's wrong.
Yeah, interesting. I've read differently.
I just saw this YouTube video that said something really different.
No, I've learned from women. I didn't enjoy it.
It hurt.
It did hurt.
Did it kicking and screaming.
No, it's funny. I actually thought I was gay freshman year of college because I didn't get any pussy.
Come through, Macklemore.
For real.
Are so Macklemore for that.
And then when I got older, I realized that not getting pussy is really straight.
That's true.
And I was like, oh, that's actually normal.
Yeah, totally. Not getting pussy. And then, damn, I can't believe I just said that.
I know, that hurt. That was kind of wild.
Ooh, I don't even know how to pronounce it. Anyway,
you sounded natural.
Yeah, the gross part was that it sounded natural.
And then sort of shaping your whole politics around that is really what it's all about.
Yeah. Thought you were saying shaping your hole.
No, not getting pussy and then shaving your hole. If you guys could learn more, could be truly proficient in one era of history, what would it be? Or like type of history, or even a history of like a specific place.
You know what I wish? I know you guys already shit on like American history, but I feel like everything from like the like 50s through the 90s, I actually don't understand what was going on in America, because it like was never taught, and everyone's like doing like little innuendo and little jokes about it. And I'm like, I actually don't understand what's going on. Well,
Sam, it's dangerous that you said that, because now I want to talk about it for a long time. Actually,
you're saying post-war, like,
yeah, like post-World War II. I feel like even like watching Oppenheimer, I was like, oh, sure. Whoa. Like I forgot about that this happened.
Atomic bomb.
But you're talking post world.
No, I'm talking post.
Yeah.
Like I think I didn't real. Like I knew it was like a big deal. I sound so stupid. I knew that the atomic bomb was invented, but I think I hadn't literally thought about, oh, it didn't exist, then it did exist, and that informed politics for the next 30 of years course. Or whatever. I think I was just sort of like, yes, they invented it, but it was, you know, it's whatever. It, like, stuff's always getting invented.
Them, you know,
yeah.
I mean, post-war, like, nuclear war was their climate change. That was what everyone was worried about on a daily basis.
Right.
True.
I mean, I watched Oppenheimer. I get it now. And I loved every second of it.
I hated it.
I have to say, for all sucked. Our...
Oh, wow.
Oh, we both loved Oppenheimer.
We both loved it.
I hated it. I just didn't care.
It was our second favorite movie of the year.
Whoa. What was number one?
Anatomy of a Fall.
Oh, I loved it. I loved Anatomy of a Fall.
Good.
Probably top three for me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really good movie.
What was your top one?
I don't know. Maybe Anatomy of a Fall, actually. Now that I'm on the spot.
Pander.
I know that there's at least two others that I loved a lot last year.
What were the other two?
That's what I'm saying. I can't remember.
Oh, you can't remember.
It was Priscilla.
I don't know what. The Whale came out 2022. That doesn't count. I loved The Whale.
You loved The Whale?
I loved it. No. I rewatched it two nights ago. I cried.
George famously cried watching it on an airplane.
I famously cried watching it, but I do think it was the altitude because I was on a plane.
No, it's a beautiful movie.
No.
It should make you cry.
It certainly wants to make you cry.
And it does.
And it really is trying hard.
If you have a heart, I cried again. Yeah. I knew it was going to happen. I knew that the daughter was going to relent at the very last second and start crying and hug her dad. And I still wept.
Wow. Did you watch it specifically to feel bad, to like wallow in your sadness of being in LA?
A little bit. I was with a friend though.
Oh.
We were both like, this would be kind of funny to just like watch a sad movie and cry together. And we did.
On The Whale.
Wow.
It was great.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's almost giving it, and sorry for saying, when straight guys would like jerk off together in middle school. Sort of the adult version of that.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, that's nice. Yeah, whereas jerking off was the child version.
What's
kind of crazy.
Exactly. Jerking off is for kids and crying is
that
for
is
adults.
That is weird.
Yeah.
What other good movie came out last year? I know this is now bad podcasting.
No, good. It's always good podcasting to be like,
it's always
what
good.
Poor
Things.
May, December.
Barbie, The Holdovers.
Some good movies.
It's a good year.
Yeah.
May, December was pretty.
I really
pretty
liked May,
yeah,
December.
May, December.
Not as good as Anatomy of a Fall.
I'd put it up there for me. Okay, this is boring now. We can't do this anymore.
Okay. Wait, so do you guys want to, okay, so Sam, your answer is you want to know about America from the 50s to the 90s, which is an iconic answer. Ismail,
when you put it like that, it sounds so stupid, but yes.
No.
Okay, Ismail.
I think China from the beginning of time to now.
Okay.
Is what I wish I knew everything about China, and from a Chinese historian, because I feel like China is like another planet, just in terms of there's a billion people there, and they're like completely different, like India's a billion people, but they're weirdly related to the West in a way. Like we have a similar language family, like there's some connections. China's like just been different forever. And it has existed in its own, has no connection to the Roman Empire, no connection to Western civilization whatsoever, and is just its own thing forever. And I don't know too much about it, and that makes me sad. I love China. I want to know more about it.
Wow.
And it scares me. China scares me as a concept.
Well, it's so large.
It's huge.
It's quite large.
And there's a billion of them. That's scary.
Wow.
JK kind of, but
damn.
George,
am I gonna get canceled?
am I gonna get canceled for this? George, what's your answer?
I mean, not to be all, I mean, I guess I have a few. All of my answers are very like Howard Zinn. I'm like, I want to know more about like the specifics of American foreign policy destroying the Middle East. I want to know more about Native history. And then the more self-serving one is I want to know more about contemporary Greek history, like from post-war to now, because I feel like all of everything we were taught in school was about ancient Greece because everyone was fetishizing ancient Greece because that was the last time Greece was number one. And I'm like, all right, let's see, like, how did we get here? When did people stop paying taxes? Like, what exactly, you know, what happened? I mean, I guess I know a little bit about the Ottoman rule and all that stuff, but I would love to know.
Good era.
I mean, I'm ashamed to say it. I know way more about America than I know about Greece, despite sort of being equally from both of those places.
Greece gets a good amount of airtime, though, I'd say.
It really does.
Even in like American schools in a pretty surprising way.
But not contemporary Greece.
No.
Yeah. No, ancient, yeah, for sure. I mean, even when we lived in the States, you would learn about ancient Greece and ancient Rome.
I mean,
and all that stuff.
This might be really offensive, but Greece today, is it, would you say that it's kind of very influenced by?
I'm so curious.
I know, it's very influenced by like the Slavic nations around it, that it's sort of lost.
I mean, I think that's what I don't want to misspeak, but I think to me, growing up there, I think there's always this push and pull of Greece being this small, like, Balkan country, let's say, and then also having ambitions to be a quote unquote serious European country. Right. Like there is this almost the anxiety of like someone in the middle class who wants to be upper class. Like Greece just wants to be as, you know, stable and rich and whatever as like, you know, France, Germany, whatever. And yet it is just this small country with a small economy. Mm-hmm. The main industry is like shipping and tourism. It doesn't have, even compared to other small countries, think about Italy, which is also a small country, how many like car companies and fashion companies and like food and whatever is there. It's like, what does Greece export? Like yogurt and olive oil. Anyway,
but Greece at the same time, it has like definitely, based on its geography, done a pretty good job of like standing out just on a cultural level. Like when people say I'm going to Greece, no one imagines like, oh, you're gonna pass over Bosnia and Herzegovina and
sure, it's much more clear.
No one imagines that it's in Eastern Europe because it just kind of like beat those charges somehow.
Well, it also is just such a, like, what you imagine when you imagine Greece is so specific. It's like people imagine the Parthenon and they imagine like islands and beautiful beaches, and it will always have that.
Yeah.
Good
job, Greece.
Good job, Greece. Good job to Greece's PR.
Seriously.
Good job to Greece's PR.
Damn.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation. I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Should we do our final segment?
I guess it's time.
Yeah. Ismail, our final segment is called Shoutouts. And in this segment, we give a shout out to anything that we enjoy. So imagine you're at TRL in 2001 shouting out to your squad back home, but about anything that you are liking. And we will go first, of course.
Can I sarcastically like something?
Of course.
Totally.
You can use this however.
We're fluent in sarcasm here.
Yeah. I actually do have one, I think, so okay. I can go. Okay, let's see if I can become even more unlikable in this episode. What is up, freaks, losers, and perverts? I want to give a huge shout out to Buying a Coffee. I, you know, as many know, I'm going into the office these days. Guess what they have in there? Free coffee. You think it's a blessing. You think I can have as much as I want and no one can tell me to stop. But guess what? When it's free, you don't enjoy it as much. It does not feel like a treat. It feels like medicine. And when yesterday I was walking, and because I also live in Los Angeles, California, and in a neighborhood that's not particularly walkable, I can't just walk out the door and go get a coffee like I normally would. And yesterday I was in a different neighborhood and I walked by a coffee shop and I said, I actually haven't bought a coffee in 2 weeks. And so I bought a coffee and I felt like myself again. I felt like I was hearing my favorite song around all my favorite friends. And just because I was paying $4.50 for a small hot coffee, it tasted better than free coffee, and it made me feel like I was in control of my life for once in my life. So buy your coffees. Yes, it's more expensive, but sometimes spending money is just worth it. XOXO, wow. Sam.
Woo! Wow.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
I relate to that.
Yeah. Thank you. I really did think office coffee would like change my life, and it bums me out kind of.
It's sad.
Yeah.
There's something sad about making a coffee and then drinking it. it just like takes out the humanity involved in like making a lady with tattoos make it for you.
Yeah.
Like that for some reason feels better.
It just feels better.
It really does.
George? I have to say, I like the way that I rely on, I need to make my own coffee in the morning to almost feel like I accomplished. It's like the first thing I can say I accomplished.
Oh.
And makes me start my day feeling like I can do a task. And I actually find that the days that I do just go and buy a coffee, it is more difficult for me to accomplish things later on. It's sort of like breaking the seal.
See, I have the opposite
productivity.
Where sometimes if I make a coffee, then I'm like, okay, well, that was all my productive energy for the day.
Totally. That's actually how I feel about exercising, which is not helpful.
Wow.
Like where I'm like, I'm finally like in a place where I'm sort of regularly exercising. And then when I go to the gym, I come back and I'm like, oh, phew, that is like enough for today. And it'll be like 10 a.m.
Yeah.
I think making coffee when I was married did make me feel more like how you're saying, George. Like it made me feel like I'm doing something for my family.
This exactly. And you're pulling your weight.
I'm helping her. I'm helping me. We're both getting energy. But now that I'm alone, it feels sad to make it alone.
Mm.
Well, I also actually think that might be related to what you're saying, because I mean, I know you like buying coffee even in New York, but like, especially now that you're away from your partner, it would be depressing to just make coffee for yourself.
Yeah. Horribly so.
Yeah.
I mean, in New York, okay. I like to make coffee on the weekdays and then buy it on the weekends. That's how I have little treats.
It's a good system.
It's a good system.
It's a good system. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'll go. I'm trying to think what I want to say. What's up, cinephiles out there? That's right. This is my second film shout out in three episodes. I want to give a shout out to the filmography of Christopher Guest. If you are depressed, if you find yourself sad, if you need something to really cheer you up, you got to go on Amazon.com, a company I love, and search Christopher Guest, and you got to stream those films. My one blind spot with him was I had never seen A Mighty Wind. I watched it. When I tell you, I actually teared up at the end, despite the fact that the entire movie is so completely, and I say this in a positive way, completely stupid. The humor is stupid. Everyone is so ridiculous and cartoonish, and at the end they stick the emotional landing, and there is a kiss, and I won't ruin anything, there is a kiss that makes you believe in love again. And I just think every single person involved, you know, I know Jennifer Coolidge now, everyone and their mother is doing a Jennifer Coolidge impression on TikTok. Well, guess what, some of us were there from day one, and I encourage everyone to go watch Waiting for Guffman, go watch For Your Consideration, go watch Mighty Wind. That is what true comedy is, and we are starving for it. Let's just say that.
Woo! And thank you for adding a dig in your shout out too. If I see a Jennifer Coolidge impression at this point in time, my head's gonna explode. You
know? What made me talk about knowing your history? The current Jennifer Coolidge moment has made me forget that that's not all she does. Like, yes, that is part of her toolbox, is doing that voice and being like spacey and whatever. But she has played like a lot of insane characters and has actually more range than people give her credit for.
Yeah.
Yeah, the impression is annoying because at this point it feels like she's doing the impression.
Yes,
it's true.
So yeah.
It's
like,
what's happening now?
Yeah, that's always sad when that happens. Okay, Ismail, whenever you're ready.
Okay. What's up, big titty bitches? I want to give a shout out to women who keep their husbands' last names after getting divorced. Especially if they were white and they were married to an ethnic man, and now they just weirdly have an ethnic last name, and they're just a white girl walking around, and maybe people will think they're Arab secretly, and it feels like stolen valor a little bit. And I think it's cool. I think it's fun, and you know, go off. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I like it a lot.
Wow, I can't believe you used our
might be specific targeting a specific person.
I can't believe you used our podcast to dox your ex. Wife, this is crazy. You know, it's always when we have straight guys on here, the audience is always, you know, sort of torn.
Yeah, you will get hate mail, unfortunately. I want everyone to know we had a great time, and we love Ismail. And if people will project things onto, every time we have a straight guest, they'll be like, Sam and George sounded uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah, they love to do that. Yeah,
that sucks.
Yeah,
Sam, I love you a lot. I've only known you for like a month and a half, but like I feel like,
and I will tell you,
the feeling's mutual.
I want to invite you to do something.
Yeah, we should hang out.
We should go to a show together. We should do some stuff.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
I think it'd be fun.
After the first week of work, I believe I asked Sam like how the room was, and the first thing he said was, "I made a new friend." And
oh, dude, that's great.
It's true.
Everyone is like, "Who's in the room?" And then I say Sam, and they go, "Oh, he's so funny." And I go, "I know, he's awesome."
Wow.
That's sweet.
Okay, I love that.
It's great.
All right, get a room.
Okay, well, George, thanks for guesting on our podcast. This is amazing.
Oh my God, it's been an absolute honor. And I hope you guys have me back soon. Everyone listening at home, I have a show at the Bell House on the 2nd. Yeah.
Okay, but Ismail, for real, thanks for doing it. And
it was a lot of fun.
Bye.
Don't hate me, people.
Bye.
Bye.
Podcast ends now. Want more? Subscribe to our Patreon for 2 extra episodes a month, Discord access, and more by heading to patreon.com/StradioLab.
And for all our visual learners, free full-length video episodes are available on our YouTube.
Now get back to work.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference.
That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.